Okie dokie.
This is KPOO San Francisco 89.5. You've reached Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant. Every week on Reality Sandwich, we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, the planet, and we have a really fun show for today. So we're going to be talking about debate and the importance of debate and discussion, both for our individual development, for the health of our community, and for the benefit of our nation as a whole. So today I'm very fortunate and excited to have with me three friends and colleagues of mine, and we are all in Toastmasters together, which is a public speaking forum, and one of our members is creating a debate club, and so we're here to talk about debate in general and then have a discussion and go from there. And so I want to introduce everybody, and we can get more into the debate conversation in a moment. First, I have James Dilworth with me, who is the owner, the president, the founder of Real Life Gifts, and he is the creator of SF Debate. So, hello, James.
Hi, Julie. Thank you for having me here.
Absolutely. And we have Wayne Lambright, who is the owner of SF Survey, restaurant reviews by people like you. Hello, Wayne.
Good afternoon.
And we have Dr. Carter McCree, who is from the pharmaceutical industry. Hello, Carter.
Hello, Julie. How are you doing?
Great. So what we thought we would do today is to spend the beginning part of the show talking about debate and discussion as an important tool for all of us to listen, speak, discuss, and understand different topics so we can develop as individual people, and also really the importance of debate as a nation. And that's something that I think is quite lacking currently. And so we'll talk about debate, and then we're going to have not so much a debate, but a small, each of us are going to kind of give our opinion on the topic of healthcare, which is very appropriate to healthful living and the Reality Sandwich show and the topics we typically cover. And then we'll just talk about our experience and what that was like and what we learned and tie it all together from that perspective. So I'm really excited for today because healthful living is all about getting to the truth, getting a palatable taste of the truth, and I think hearing other people's perspective and hearing our own perspective discussing it out loud is really an important piece of healthful living and understanding the reality of what's going on around us. So first I want to start with James and talk a little bit about where did you come up with this idea of debate and why is it so important?
Well, Julie, thank you. This SF Debate was formed out of a realization that I think many of us have intuitively, but it occurred to me at some point in time that we're all, as our media availability has grown wider and wider, then now with the access of the internet, with so many television stations, so many radio stations, we tend to have a tendency to pick and choose the media which we tend to agree with. And that is a very dangerous knock-on effect, is that we're constantly receiving messages which all tend to be one-sided. If you are living in Texas, go to church, you're listening to your pastor, you start watching Rush Limbaugh, you listen to the president speak a lot, your point of view becomes naturally more and more one-sided. If you listen to KPOO all the time and you're a San Franciscan, you shop at Whole Foods or the many places around here and have a very eclectic lifestyle, you also, your point of view is more likely to be shifted to one side. There is no right and wrong to to an argument, but when you only see one side of the argument, your perception of reality can often become skewed. And I felt that it was very important that if two people can get together with different points of view, by sharing those points of view, you will start to achieve a more centered, more balanced approach to the world. And hence was my thought for SF Debate would be, it would be great to bring groups of people with different points of view to discuss in detail an argument, not only to get their own points of view out, but to also listen and understand other people's points of view and hopefully achieve some sort of balanced outlook on the world.
Absolutely. And I'm really happy to have you here because you also have the perspective of originally being from another country, so you have other perspectives of what works and what doesn't work, so it'll be really interesting to get your perspective as we go through this. I think in the United States we're not really that comfortable with debate, it seems. Even when we have a presidential debate, there really isn't that juiciness that I would expect or hope to see in a debate where someone's really questioning somebody on an issue and they really have to give an answer to the issue instead of just chatting on about whatever their agenda is and not really fully coming forward and answering those questions.
Actually, this topic in particular struck me when I first moved to the U.S. I was quite taken aback by how little people actually challenge each other on different opinions. One of the nice things about the United States is that people are very, very respectful of each other. We're very kind, we're very positive. Where I come from, we're constantly cutting each other down, we're sarcastic. But we challenge each other when we don't believe what someone else says. Over here, there tends to be a respect, especially quite a lot of times on politics. If someone disagrees with you, you'll often let it slide. It's not important to you.
Mm-hmm.
It comes to religion especially. People here are very, very respectful of other people's beliefs and religions, when actually perhaps that's not such a healthy thing. We should be questioning. We should be asking, what is the real truth out there? Trying to find it not only for ourselves, but for the people around here.
Right. It's almost like we're afraid to... Maybe in our culture we see that questioning as some sort of disapproval or something, and immediately when we start questioning or disagreeing with somebody, there gets to be a lot of defense that comes up, and we'd rather just not rock the boat, and so we quickly smooth things over without ever really getting to the heart of issues. And I think the challenge with that is that people never really get to express their opinion. So if I have a little grievance with you, or we have a difference of opinion on something, if we could really hash it out, we might find that we're not really that far apart. You know, mm-hmm. with my father, he's a staunch Republican, and I kind of swung to the other side, but really, so we end up spending all our time fighting about one party versus the other party. When we really talk about each issue, we actually pretty much agree on most of them, but we don't really ever have that chance to really get down and discuss those things because it becomes uncomfortable. My mom starts butting in because she doesn't want arguments happening. And so it just continues to maintain this level of misunderstanding.
Yeah. And I think actually you point out a popular misconception there, that when you debate an issue, that is argument.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly one of my former girlfriends used to hate talking politics with me because she thought that I was criticizing her.
Right.
Really what we're doing is discussing an issue. The people who have the different viewpoints, they bring those discussions. And debates, it should be heated, but you should always be looking at the issue as opposed to the person presenting the issue. And that's the difference between a discussion or a debate or versus a fight or an argument.
Right. It's constructive, and you're really looking at what the other person's perspective is. And I think that we bring a lot of judgment into our conversations. And if we were able to just look at it for what it is, without feeling threatened, then we could actually really hear somebody else's perspective. We were at Toastmasters last night, and we had a discussion about taking the troops out of Iraq, and I feel very strongly about taking them out. But as soon as I heard the other person's opinion, I thought, there's some pretty interesting founded ideas in there, and maybe there's a way that it doesn't have to be all one-sided, and that if we actually really discussed an issue, we might actually be able to come distill it down to something that everybody wants. Everybody wants the country to be free and to do well and, you know, etc. But we often don't really get to that heart of that issue because we never really listen to the other person and take in other perspectives, either because it's threatening or because we don't want to rock the boat. And so I think that there's, from a personal developmental perspective, it's really important to hear other sides, because there's a quote, "Don't believe everything you think." And I love that, because we tend to, once we think something, we believe that, and then we sort of get very tunnel vision that there isn't another way, that is the only side to things. And so I think that can become dangerous if we really believe everything we think. And by speaking it out loud and hearing other people's perspective, we can really start to understand the issues a lot better.
Yeah, and I think that's the goal that we have with SF Debate, and the website is www.sfdebate.org. When we have our meetings, we're trying to create a safe environment where it's comfortable and public and commonly accepted that you will challenge each other's opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And you will do so in an environment where it's okay to do that. It's okay to say that I believe this, but also it's important that you also listen and understand other people's, you know, what they bring to the table. And hopefully, when you come to a debate like this, you will see, you may come with some pretty well-formed opinions and well-thought-out opinions, but like we did last night, we're often surprised by some emotional arguments or some factual arguments that actually may be bring new light to something that we hadn't seen, because, as you said, our reality had become tunnel visioned. You know, mm-hmm. what we started taking as true, we were picking small apples about to reinforce the case in our mind, rather than opening ourselves up to actually all the different apples out there, which sometimes destroy our own case in our own mm-hmm. mind.
Absolutely. So what do people, if people want to, are interested in this, there might be people out there that might want to hone their speaking skills or their discussion skills, or just get a little bit more comfortable in a really open forum to sharing. A lot of people are really uncomfortable just sharing their opinion, and I think this is a great forum. So maybe you can tell people out there, I'm sure there's people listening that might be interested that really have no experience and might be a little intimidated. So what kind of people can join this club that you're creating?
Well, SF Debate really is open to anybody and everybody who has a passion for getting to the truth and understanding the world around them. It's really a chance for people to develop their persuasive speaking skills. So it's an environment where we will be similar to Toastmasters, helping people to achieve more with their lives. Mm-hmm. Once you can persuade people of your opinions, you can really it's important in all aspects of your life, whether you're in sales, whether you're trying to convince your wife or husband to do something for you, or whether you're interested in politics. The ability to persuade people of your opinion is very, very, very important to our success in our own lives. So SF Debate, first and foremost, is a forum for us all to get better at persuasion. Obviously, we will be taking a political looking at issues of politics, sometimes maybe even issues of religion and so on, and questioning the truth that is presented to us. There's a lot of facts out there, but how we interpret those facts and how we think we should respond as a society, there's many, many different opinions. So we will be discussing those, and so it's really also a forum for understanding, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to get to a higher level than if you just simply listen to a couple radio stations or you read a couple newspapers. It's a good area to come every week to discuss a topic that's important to you. It's also a chance to meet other people who also have maybe similar or different opinions to you, and interact in a social environment. So I hope, you know, my hope for the club is that we'll actually be able to bring San Franciscans of all types together mm-hmm. In a forum that is okay to discuss the tough issues. And whether you are a staunch Republican who's got a high-level job, or whether you're someone who is a San Francisco lefty with some very, very progressive opinions, you'll be able to come together and actually share those mm-hmm. in an environment where it's actually welcomed as opposed to seen as uncouth or...
Great. And I'm assuming there's no experience required or no special skills. Anybody can join. It's open to anybody that's interested in
engaging. It is
engaging.
Indeed. Although, you know, as Toastmasters here, I would recommend if anybody out there hasn't done public speaking before, go to Toastmasters.org, I believe, and look for a Toastmasters club, because Toastmasters really is a fantastic organization for developing your public speaking in a very supportive environment. And one of the things about debating and such is that even though we'll aim for it to be supportive, your opinions will be constantly questioned, and it's a much higher pressure than if, you know, for example, Toastmasters organization, which is much, much more open to failure.
That's a very good point. And many of us that are here today, we're all Toastmasters, and we've been in it, in some cases, for many years, and so there's always things to learn. And like James said, it's really supportive from the beginner all the way through the very advanced. We have some really advanced speakers in our group, and it's always rewarding no matter what level you're at, so that's a really good point. But just so you know, there isn't actually any requirement to join SF Debate. If you feel comfortable speaking and you're comfortable with that, then you're welcome to join. You don't have to have any formal public speaking skills, as long as you're comfortable with that.
And in particular, I might just suggest go to the website, take a look around, see our the format for the debates. It's sfdebate.org. And sign up on there. Join the list so that we know who you are. We haven't yet held our first official debate. We've had some informal ones. But if you join the list, we will send you out with information as the debates start to happen. Also, if you're interested in helping organize, you know, this is a small group, but, you know, it takes a fair amount of organizational skills. If you've got a good meeting room that we can have our meetings in, also go to the website, sign up, and let me know. And
great.
There's a place there for you to do that. We'd certainly love volunteers to help us organize and put things together.
Excellent. Great. Well, before we start our discussion of the day, I just wanted to bring debate into the context of our nation a little bit. I'd just love to ask you your personal experience, because I think that first we have to start with the individual, and then we have to go to our community, and then we have to go to the nation and the world, and how debate is an important process for all of those. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we really don't have that currently, that open debate with our government officials that I think that we should have. So I'd love your perspective of what you found, you know, living abroad or growing up in another country, and what it was like, you know, what it was like for those leaders.
Yeah, I think one of the, as we said earlier, one of the great things about the United States is we're very respectful of other people's opinions. And I think Wayne actually was mentioning before the show, had a very, very good point about, maybe Wayne could probably say it better.
So we were talking about debate, and I'd love to see George Bush go through the grilling that Tony Blair does once a week. I'd love to see some type of open forum where the general public, not hand-picked, you know, fans of George Bush who are just going to ask him, how can I help make your job easier? I mean, real questions about real issues in an open debate every week, maybe for 3 or 4 hours. Maybe we could really get somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think one of the popular misconceptions in this country is that this is one of the leaders in democracy in the world. Actually, when it comes down to it, there's a number of inefficiencies with the democratic system in this country, and I think probably one of the biggest ones that I would love to see nailed is that the accountability of the executive branch to continuously answer to the people that we elect, not once every 4 years, but week after week after week after week. George Bush should be able to, and his administration should be out there defending their course of action on a day-to-day basis. There's a lot of things going on in the executive branch, but it's at the moment, really what happens is whenever the president's ratings drop, he holds a press conference, takes 3 or 4 questions from some friendly reporters, and that is the amount to which our president answers to society. Mm-hmm. And it really boils down to a couple of sound bites, you know, in the media. Really what would be much better is to have an open discussion where other elected officials get to ask tough questions, and that there isn't any avoiding the question or next question please, or talking about something completely irrelevant to the tough question. You have to answer it. I think that would, just that fact alone, if there was more debate and more questioning within the government, we would have a more democratic, more accountable society. Maybe we wouldn't have gone to war in Iraq. Maybe we would have still have done. But the answer would have been more close to the right thing to do than I think maybe what's happening at the moment.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that perspective. It's really helpful. And hopefully we can start to change some of these things when people are open to that. You know, we have to demand it, and the president's not going to say, yeah, this would be great, grill me every week, I'd love that. So we need to demand or get behind each other, and probably a good forum to start with that would be a debate on whether we should debate the president, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that feel we shouldn't question the president, that would be somehow bad for our standing with other nations, or who knows what their opinion might be.
Yeah. What does he have to hide?
Well,
why not go out there?
I mean, I
don't think he has anything to hide, so he has nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Good point, Wayne.
Yeah, if he's a good president and he's doing the job right, regardless of whether it was Bush or Clinton or any other president, a good president should be able to stand up and defend the policies that he's executing on and the way he's doing it. And my suspicion is right now that our current president would have a very hard time doing it, which is why he does it so little.
Right, exactly. Okay, so let's have a discussion right now. We picked a topic that we thought would be relevant for Reality Sandwich and also provide some possible differing views on things. So we picked nationalized healthcare. So I don't know if we want to more formally frame it than that, or if we just want to leave it as what people's opinion is on nationalized healthcare. We thought we'd go and just kind of do a little, we have something at Toastmasters called the Table Topics, and it's sort of 2 minutes where you get to just speak off the top of your head about a topic. So we're going to do that right now. Is there anybody that wants to start?
I'll start.
Okay. Wayne.
So what the question is?
The question is,
I think maybe we should maybe form the debate that should this country have a nationalized healthcare system?
Great.
So I was watching 60 Minutes, I think about 6 months ago, and they said Americans are paying for national healthcare, but we're not getting it. So there's a lot of money being spent on healthcare, but it's being mismanaged. And through efficiency, our taxpayer dollars are really paying for it, but a lot of people aren't receiving it. And we should it works in other countries. Mm-hmm. We should examine why, you know, why does it work there, but it's not working here. And I think there's the people in the healthcare industry really do care about helping people, and they're not really the problem. I think the problem is it's probably the business aspect of it, people trying to make the most profit. And I think physicians, when they go into the practice of medicine, it's truly to help people, and that's the core principle. And I think a lot of people, and somebody said there's like 40% of Americans don't have health coverage. It's some alarming number. Yet these people are paying taxes. What are they getting for their tax dollar? I don't know. I mean, that's...
Mm-hmm.
I think we should have it. They should at least... Kaiser has... How much more would it cost? Would Americans be willing to pay 2% more in taxes to have a national health care coverage? I think they would. I personally have limited health care coverage. I have what I call emergency coverage. Mm-hmm. My deductible is $7,000, and it's more if I break a leg or something major happens. But as far as I rarely get sick, but, you know, it could happen. But I would prefer to have complete coverage, but it's just not affordable for me.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Well, Wayne, I think you need coverage, honestly. This is Carter speaking, and everyone needs some sort of coverage. However, it isn't necessarily going to be more efficient if we have a national healthcare plan. I do believe in some sort of pooling of resources, much as you mentioned, that it's very necessary. When I lived in Washington, D.C., I volunteered for the White House Healthcare Reform Center and answered a lot of letters that were, quite frankly, very moving and really made you think twice about what many of the bureaucrats who are running medicine today in this country, what could be going through their mind. And honestly, it probably is the profit motive. Having worked in the pharmaceutical industry for a little over 5 years now, I have seen the profit motive really kind of ruin some very good initiatives. And quite honestly, it's a very difficult thing to administer on a large size. The biggest problem is one of rationing. And are you going to really have your operation in time? And are you going to be able to get the care you need when you want it, unless you're willing to really pay for it? And American dollars are really what run the pharmaceutical industry and what run the really world's development of new technologies and new drugs. And it's because our employers, quite frankly, the big corporations like one that I work for, which isn't actually that large, but a corporation is the one who's footing the bill. So while the American people do need to pay more money to get health care than they do in other parts of the world, we actually get higher quality treatment, and that often that treatment comes quicker than it would in some other countries where you may have to wait for that needed operation or that technology to be applied. One thing about our healthcare system is that you know it's been tried and true, and the FDA has approved these particular products as ones that can help you, and we really do have a very strong healthcare system in this country.
Great. Thanks, Carter.
Well, this is James speaking again. This is an interesting topic. You know, where I come from, we actually do have a national healthcare system. And although I haven't had to use it very much, it is a real pleasure to know that when you hurt yourself, that the society is there to help you out. When we hurt ourselves, we're usually at our most vulnerable points. We've broken our arm. I've been to hospital a couple times in the UK, and it literally is, you walk in the door, they take your notes just like the casualty, or just like ER here. They bring you in, they sew you up, look after you, and send you on your way again. The only difference between the healthcare I've seen over here and the healthcare I've seen in the United Kingdom is that when you come to a hospital here, have a small injury taken care of, 4 weeks later you end up with a massive, outrageous usually, bill for the care that was given to you. Now, many people don't have the ability to pay for it, and there's, I think, medical-related bankruptcies are the biggest reason that people go bankrupt in this country, because they accidentally injure themselves without insurance. And I think we can all agree that we should spend less money on healthcare to get better quality and cover everybody. A developed society should be looking after all people in it, and I think this country does a remarkably poor job of doing that. When we have these misconceptions that the American healthcare system is the best in the world, and that capitalism is the best in the world. But unfortunately, healthcare doesn't work like a regular business, you know, with supply and demand. There's a lot more inefficiencies involved. And one of the big ones is that if you were ill and a treatment was going to cost $100,000 for you to stay alive, you would find that $100,000 any way you could. If it was going to cost $1 million, you would find that treatment any way you could. How much money are we prepared to spend to keep us all alive? Should we provide a basic level of coverage for everybody so that, you know, we're helping everybody out? I think there is the exact facts on how to put together a good healthcare system can be debated. But the important thing is right now is that we pay twice as much for everybody, twice as much in any other developed country in the world to look after our people. Yet we don't cover 40 million people of them. And the quality of healthcare, okay, if you need to have a very advanced, you know, heart bypass or brain surgery, the United States definitely wins hands down on some of the best hospitals out there. But if you need to have your arm patched and, you know, reset, the United States actually is incredibly inefficient. Mm-hmm. Your waiting lines to get that done are no less than anybody else's. The quality of care is no less, and we pay twice as much for it. Mm-hmm. We should be trying to get it down.
Absolutely. Thank you, James. I obviously have opinions on this subject for sure, and I don't know if I could say yes or no to this question without some major caveats. I just think the whole system is broken, and I don't really think it's repairable, actually. I think it needs to be completely scratched and started from the beginning, and I don't know if that's actually possible. So I don't know if I have a solution, but I do feel pretty strongly that right now our healthcare system is synonymous with Western medicine, which is synonymous with surgery and drugs. Those are the only tools that Western medicine and our healthcare system has at their disposal. Now, they say that that eat right and exercise, quote, is kind of a standard mantra in the healthcare system, but nobody says how to do it or really offers much support on how to do that. And then the second part is, how do we pay for this system? So we have these insurance companies, and a perfect example of how that's broken is this whole Medicare thing. So with Medicare right now, we have this new system, and the problem is that it's confusing, and people don't know what to do, but I think that might have been designed that way, possibly intentionally, to kind of confuse people until they realize that, what was really buried in that bill was that people aren't allowed to, the government is now not allowed to bargain for lower either compete or try to negotiate lower costs on drugs, and people are now not allowed to go outside of the United States. The government's not allowed to go outside and come back in and bring drugs in that are cheaper in another country. And we know that the pharmaceutical industry artificially inflates our drug cost. Well, that's what I believe. You could say that they charge less in other countries. I think they inflate ours in this country. And then the challenge that you have is it becomes so expensive to run a system that we spend more money and yet we have lower coverage, as James mentioned. And I think that is a huge problem. This problem's bigger than that, though, because then you have to take politics. We have a revolving door. People that were in Congress trying to talk about this Medicare thing were actively, there were a couple people actively trying to get jobs in the pharmaceutical industry at the time, and so we know there's a revolving door between pharmaceutical industry and the people that make the laws, and then the people that make the laws put bills like this into it. So I think that not only is the healthcare system broken, but the insurance industry and the system in general that sets the whole thing up. And so I would say that if we could overhaul the whole thing and start from scratch and have basic acute care covered for everybody, I think that would be great. I think we then need to look outside of that for other solutions for chronic care. And because we pay so much in our premium, we don't really have extra disposable income to go try to manage our chronic diseases elsewhere, then we become dependent on the system that I think is broken, inefficient, and doesn't meet the needs of people with chronic issues. So my thought would be scrap the whole thing, start from scratch, have a nationalized health care cover the acute care, and then have more disposable income for people to manage chronic care as they'd like to. That's my thought.
Yeah, I think your point of perspective on the system right now is broken beyond repair. is probably actually not far from the truth. You know, the whole way that the healthcare now is finance, employer-based finance, you know, that stems from decisions that were made after the war that weren't necessarily the right decisions, but they were made then because there wasn't anything else out there. We've now patched our system for about 60 years. We've got a system that is covers this, doesn't cover that. We've got little bits of coverage for elderly people, but no coverage for these other people who need it. And obviously the spiraling costs these days are a major, major issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big difficulty right now is that there are broken gaps between the cost and the demand for it. You know, if you the obvious one, and I think I have to give credit to our current president, even though he's not trying to fix the system as a whole, he's noticed one of the big problems is that people go for treatment with no accountability of the cost.
Mm.
You know, I go to turn up at hospital, if I have insurance, I want everything to be done right. And if I don't have insurance, I don't even know what should be done until the bill comes, you know, a month later. And, you know, this just happened to one of my friends where, you know, she went to hospital for what turned out to be some simple stomach pains from, you know, bad food. But she got EEGs and EKGs and MRIs and whatever because the doctor wanted to be absolutely critically sure. And the result was that, you know, she ended up with a bill that most of it came to herself for $4,000.
Mm.
If she'd been presented with that that cost decision further up front, would she have chosen that care?
Right, right. And then part of our medical system is based on the whole liability and fear of being sued, so they run every test under the book where, you know, if there was more discussion about it when you go to the doctor saying, well, I think this is what it is, but if you want us to run some tests, we can do that, and it would be this cost, and that would be more open. But if they were to do that and someone turned down that service and it turned out to be something important or life-threatening, then now we have millions of dollars of lawsuits on our hands, and that becomes problematic. So this issue is definitely a big one.
But now aren't we getting off of healthcare into
we are.
Tort reform and legal issues, and this is really not the basis. I thought we wanted to focus on just one topic, which is healthcare reform. And quite frankly, there are holes in our system that we do need to repair. And there are instances such as James Friend, who ended up spending $4,000 for a upset tummy. That's egregious. But as you pointed out, the doctor has to worry about their malpractice insurance
mm-hmm.
and other sorts of costs that are involved. So it's a very complicated issue. I do think that, getting back to your acute versus chronic, that many of the organizations that have been charged with protecting our health, these insurance companies, Kaiser, whoever you want to mention, but these HMOs, these organizations that we entrust our health to, are starting to wake up and try and put forth healthy alternatives, eat healthier, weight loss programs, stop smoking programs, these sorts of things. And they really are seeing the benefit down the road of having a little bit of these chronic care built into their day-to-day communications with you. I know I often get things from my company about programs for all sorts of counseling having to do with weight loss, quitting smoking, emotional problems. One of the things we haven't talked about is the incidence of depression in this country
mm.
and the cost associated with that. They're huge. So I really do agree that there's some holes, but quite frankly, we need to take advantage of what's out there for ourselves. You guys may remember recently that one of our Toastmasters gave a talk on all the free healthcare services available in this city, and San Francisco has a lot of them. And if we go out and you take some personal responsibility and try and improve your health on your own, you're going to be rewarded. Now, whether that reward is going to come into your pocketbook or not, that's a whole nother story.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the ironic things about the United States system, where employers are basically funding the healthcare, is that it actually leaves out the most disadvantaged people who need the healthcare most. And, you know, typically people who are able to turn up to work every morning tend to be the healthier members of society, where the people who really need healthcare, that the benefits of a nationalized healthcare system are exactly the ones who are being left out of our society right now, out of our system.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know what makes me think of is Ross Perot, and he was running. He had those little pie charts, and he showed where the tax dollars went. And I think it was roughly like 55% of our tax dollars go towards Medicare and Medicaid basically taking care of the senior citizens. Does that seem accurate, Carter?
Honestly, I'm not familiar with those statistics, but I wouldn't be surprised if a large portion of our health care dollar does go to the elderly, because quite frankly, they're the ones that have more health care problems.
Mm-hmm.
And as James pointed out, it's often the people that are most underserved who need the health care the most. As I said before, we are lucky here in the city that there are resources for people to reach out to, but it's difficult to have those people who need them understand where to go and get them. And I see it every day on my street, quite honestly, that there's people who could be helped by services maybe just around the corner, but they don't know to go there and to talk to the caseworker and to get the help that's available to them.
For a national health care system, don't congressmen and senators, they have like special government health care? Why don't we just give that to everybody? I mean, they love it, right?
That's a good question. I can't answer that one. Well, I suppose if I were going to play devil's advocate on this thing with the tax dollars, you know, then my thought comes up that that's the reason I came up with the kind of covering acute care is that I don't know if I don't believe in using the system to manage chronic diseases. And we talk about the elderly, and I'm sitting here thinking, yes, there are a lot of people that are sick, and there's a lot of people that are beyond, they need that system. They're sort of stuck and they need that system. But there's a whole lifestyle and a whole world of people that if they just took responsibility for their health and chose to get healthy versus relying on a couple pills, then we wouldn't have to be spending the billions of dollars. Yet our system isn't set up to educate people on getting healthy. It's a business. It's managing these diseases. It's either keeping people just barely going. I won't villainize the system now, but they're just barely going. They're not getting healthy. They're not getting out of that disease state. So from that perspective, do I want to be spending, if it is 55%, I don't necessarily agree that I want to be paying for somebody's seven type 2 diabetic medications when they can just give up sugar. You know, I'm generalizing, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that are annoyed with me right now for saying this. But, you know, if I would play devil's advocate, I would say I don't believe in those systems. I think they're totally broken. I don't think that they work. I think they do a disservice. I think they make people unhealthier, and yet we're paying billions of dollars to support that system.
I think actually you've got an interesting point there, is that if we look at the advertising dollars that are being spent on drugs, I watch very little television, but it doesn't take long to see every commercial break there's another advert for Xanax or Levitra or whatever it might actually be. If some of that money was actually spent on, you know, if there was some sort of, if the government, if there was a national insurance system whereby an authority was looking at, you know, lowering its costs by trying to make sure that the general population was healthy, then there would be a, you know, if some of that money, instead of being spent then on drugs, was actually spent on, for example, you know, an Eat Right campaign or Exercise Right campaign, or buying bicycles for people to go to work, or, you know, creating a public bicycle scheme or something like that, or more bicycle paths. Those channeling those health dollars towards programs will actually help people out, as opposed to simply advertising on a pharmaceutical basis.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that would be a good way to spend some money.
Right.
I want to talk about sugar.
Oh, great.
What a great
topic.
Let's
do it, Wayne.
A year ago, I went on my girlfriend wanted to go on the Atkins diet, and I thought, yeah, I'll support you. I'll go on this with you. And I didn't think I needed to lose weight. I lost 40 pounds.
Wow.
And I thought it was muscle. You know, I thought I had all but I was 40 pounds overweight. And lo and behold, I realized I was absolutely, probably chronically addicted to sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize how much sugar is in things. Or even that, you know, breads get converted to sugar. And the sugar is just, it's so addictive. And it took me almost 40 days before I felt comfortable not eating sugar.
Mm-hmm.
I was really just nervous about it. And sugar just puts on so much weight. And nobody seems to talk about the bad aspects of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And these people, I think there's a lot of, you know, what is that movie? Super Size Me. And it talks about how, you know, Americans' eating habits they're not really good, and we have, I think America has the most people who are overweight in the world.
Mm-hmm, we do.
And this is not going to get better. And just by being 40 pounds lighter, I notice how much easier it is to get around, and I feel more energetic. I can, you know, run up the stairs. You know, being extremely overweight has got to be really debilitating. My father was about 380 pounds at 6'4", and I just don't know how he got around. I mean, just the energy. And that's got to put an extreme strain on your system and make your life, like, twice as hard.
Oh, absolutely.
And it doesn't seem like there's much emphasis on, you know, getting healthy and being in shape.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, if we had just the chronic care covered, and then we had maybe a little extra money in our pocket, we could choose, okay, well, I don't want to do anything. I'll just use my money to buy a drug. Or I might say, you know what, I think I need to address this, and I think I need to get healthy, and I think I need to take responsibility, so I'm going to take this little extra cash I have in my pocket from not spending so much on my insurance, and I'm going to actually do something like Wayne just said.
My one tip,
yes.
This is how I trick myself into exercising, and it's, I just have to share it. When I feel I'm extremely lazy, and the only way I can do it is I go for a walk. And I go at least 15 minutes in one direction,
mm-hmm.
and you got to get home.
That's right.
So at least you got a 30-minute walk.
Perfect.
I mean, you keep do it 3 or 4 times a week, and you're going to actually build muscle. And when you have muscle, that muscle needs to be fed, and it will feed off your, you know, your extra fat,
mm-hmm.
and it ends up burning. It ends up burning off your calories even when you're not working.
Absolutely. Really important parts of healthcare that we never think about.
You know, there's another addictive substance that we haven't really talked about, and that's nicotine. And quite frankly, here in San Francisco, it's probably because you don't see it that much. It's been 10 years since we've outlawed it. But the way over here, I was listening to Talk of the Nation, and they were talking about the kind of Joe Camel generation, so to speak, these folks that are in like the 18 to 25 year old range who are smoking just in the weekends, just when they're out with friends. They're not regular smokers. And we really need to work on helping those folks realize the danger of smoking, because quite frankly, many of the things we've been talking about that happen in the elderly got started when these folks were younger.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can develop good habits at this relatively younger, healthier age, you're going to be better able to maintain your health in the elderly generations when really the costs start going up considerably. And I know myself personally, I've had a little bit of rise in my blood pressure. Now I'm trying to cut all the sodium out of my diet and working my tail off, quite frankly, running and doing all sorts of things, regular exercise, to get that hypertension down just enough to where I no longer need a diuretic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of my major goals over the next year or two, is to try and change the stress in my life, for lack of a better term. And whether it's sodium stress, whether it's job stress, whether it's girlfriend stress, whatever kind of stress it is, just to lower it and thereby lower my blood pressure. So we really all have, it's something I keep coming back to, we all have to take our own personal steps to really ensure our health, and then healthcare costs will go down,
mm-hmm.
overall. Now, you're not going to see it in your, my copayment is still going to be the same. I'm not going to see the actual cost, but overall society will see a betterment, and society will have lower costs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, we have about 5 minutes, but I just wanted to say that those are really good points that both Wayne and Carter had, which is that we have to look at the system and how it's broken and how it's feeding what's opposite of what we're trying to do. We're trying to make people healthier, and I don't think it's feeding that properly. So I think that whatever overhaul we need to do, we need to take into consideration how are we going to help support people being able to take care of more of their health from their own perspective. But I want to spend the last 5 minutes just talking about, okay, so now we had our 2 minutes each, and then we had a discussion about our thoughts, and I'm just curious now, in our last 5 minutes, what did each of you, did you learn anything new? Was there value in hearing other people's perspective?
Yeah, I might go first on that one. I came here, and healthcare has been something I've done a fair amount of research about. I'm less articulate at it than I would like to be at it. One of the great things about even our little discussion here is I've actually realized there's some areas that I need to improve on as far as articulating my point of view. It's a complex topic. We've picked perhaps the most complex,
mm-hmm.
of all topics. And you've really got to get out some real key opinions and thoughts. But I was actually quite surprised that I actually got some really interesting information from you, Julie, as far as the difference between chronic healthcare and acute healthcare. as a relatively young person, I have only really gone to doctors for acute problems. But you obviously are more familiar with a completely different segment of society with the chronic problems, which is something completely alien to me. Mm. And bringing in the need for general awareness programs on diet and so on, that actually wasn't something that I had considered beforehand. It's actually strengthened my belief that there should be more governmental or maybe centralized involvement in helping us all become healthy and providing programs for that. Because right now there isn't any real need, there isn't anybody out there with a burning need to get the healthcare costs down. Mm-hmm. And if there was a centralized national healthcare system which is taxpayer responsible, maybe they would have they would be able to make that trade-off. Well, should we spend, $5 million advertising on people to eat less sugar, or should we, spend that $5 million in chronic care for people who are overweight? And that is a trade-off which I'm not sure, I don't think, is being made today.
Hmm.
And you told me that.
Thank you.
Or you made me think it.
I learned, we knew about the big system and maybe it's broken and how to fix it. We don't really have that answer. But what I hadn't thought of was the being healthy. There's probably a lot of Americans that wouldn't need all this heavy coverage or comprehensive medical coverage if they took care of themselves more, if they exercised more. And I wonder, what if every American went for an hour walk once a week, what percentage that would reduce, medical bills?
Mm-hmm.
It might be billions of dollars if every American went for a walk a week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something probably almost everybody can do, and it doesn't cost a penny.
Right.
And for, if Americans started doing that, you wouldn't need gyms, but that's another topic.
Well, maybe people would be more excited to go to the gym, so...
Yeah.
Actually, this morning on the Today Show, they had all these things you can buy for walking, which kind of confused me because really all you need to do is
feet.
Just walk. But getting back to what I think I've learned, I don't know that I've learned brand new stuff here, but I do feel very strongly that a lot of the issues I haven't thought about in 10, 15 years are coming back around now, and many of the things that have been long-term problems in this country are starting to bubble back up to the surface because we're not taking care of ourselves. And what it really comes down to is taking care of ourselves and coming up with the best way to do that. So while I can't say anybody brought up something I had never thought about before, I sure haven't thought about these issues in a long time, and I think we need to start thinking about them maybe every day when you get up for a few minutes in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
How can I make my health better today?
Absolutely. And I think for myself, I really noticed how Carter pointed out that I started going into tort reform and pharmaceutical reform and insurance and all of these things and making it so big that there's really no place to start. So I think what I just learned or maybe just had more awareness of is there a way we can boil these things down to places we can actually start today versus scrapping the whole thing and starting over again? Or is this something that we're really talking about? There's four or five systems broken, and really to make progress, we need to start over again. And I don't really have an answer, but it was interesting to see that I started bringing in all these areas, which made it almost impossible to take action today. And what we want to be able to do is to take each of us take little action as we go.
Well, the one action you can take is exercising.
That's
you
right,
can,
Wayne.
You can make
you
yourself
can.
As fit as possible.
Yes.
And eat right.
And eat, yeah.
Yes, you can each take responsibility for your own health. And that's what we try to do here at Reality Sandwich and Healthful Living, so that's a perfect message. So we have 2 minutes left. I want to make sure that people know how to get a hold of SF Debate. This has been Reality Sandwich talking to Wayne, James, and Carter about a new organization that's being formed called SF Debate and the value of debate. So, James, can you give that contact information again?
Yes, please go to www.sfdebate.org, sfdebate.org. And go there, you'll read a little bit about the forum. When we have our meetings, they'll probably be very more focused, and we'll try not to wander so much on, especially on a topic such as big as this. The idea of CFSF debate is it's probably an hour-long meeting where different sides of an opinion will be presented by people who've got a lot of knowledge in it, and then it's open to discussion from everybody in that meeting, and it's really an organized way to discuss and learn more.
Great. Well, I learned a lot today and last night, and I think it's a great forum for so many things, so I will definitely be there and hope there's a lot of people listening that would be interested in joining us in this pursuit. And is there anything else anybody wants to say before we head off the air?
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. This was really great.
It was fun.
Good. Great. So if you have any questions, you can always email me. My website is healthfullivingsf.com. That's HEALTHFULLIVINGSF, as in San Francisco. And I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living, and you've been listening to our radio show, Reality Sandwich, where we serve up a palatable taste of the truth every Thursday at noon. So stay tuned, and hope to see you or hear from you next time.